Welcome to New Money. I'm Brian Hirsch, and this evening we are focusing on the healthcare industry. The news this week is about the troubles with the medical scheme Health Squared. Some years ago, medical aids were forced to have 25% solvency ratio, and from press reports it appears that Health Squared's solvency ratio has deteriorated from 6% to 2.15. The trouble for the 23,000 beneficiary members on the scheme is where are they going to find additional cover? However, although the Council for Medical Schemes are in talk with the country's biggest medical schemes to take on these members, it appears that many are reluctant to take on older and ailing members. And joining this evening to try and make sense of what is happening in the industry is Clayton Samsudin. He's a group CEO of Phoenix FSG. Clayton, good to have you on the show.
Good evening. Thanks for having me, Brian.
First question is, why has the regulator not acted sooner? I mean, we spoke some years ago, companies struggling to get their margins up to 25% solvency. And here the news, I don't know how accurate it is, I'm only telling you what I've read, is that solvency margins are so low. But surely the regulators should have acted a lot sooner than they have?
Yeah, well, indeed, Brian, the regulator does and have acted sooner. What had happened is that when a scheme falls below 25% solvency, the scheme is required to submit a business plan to the council wherein it is stated that how they're going to get the solvency back up to 25%. So in this case, the scheme had stated in their business plan they'll get the solvency to recover back up to 17.1% by the end of 2021. At that point, it didn't happen. So they instead performed at 6%. At that stage, I believe the council then wanted to appoint a curator to better manage the finances of the scheme. And a few months go by, and we get to a point now where we see the solvency is just below 3%, as you stated. So, unfortunately, the Board of Trustees, who, and a very important point, was elected by the members of the scheme, had definitely blindsided both the members, the administrator of the scheme, as well as the Council for Medical Schemes by applying for voluntary liquidation without those parties being consulted. But thankfully, we now see that there's many parties, including the council and the administrator, that's appealing this court case now of the voluntary liquidation.
But Clayton, it's simple. If you don't have money, then, you know, you've got a real problem. If you can't pay your claims, and you're going to have a problem going forward. But let's turn to the members, and let's understand, firstly, the members of Health Squared. What are they going to do? I mean, is there any scheme that's going to take them on willy-nilly, the whole lot?
I doubt it very much. The demographics is significantly, I think, higher than anyone else in the industry. So, for example, the average age is 49, somewhere around there. The pension ratio is significantly high, almost 30%. They've lost about 19% of their members since 2019. So it's a really difficult situation. And I agree with everyone. You know, the council should have stepped in sooner. We should have had some life-saving scenario sooner. But as we stand now, I don't know of a solution on the table, which means come 1 September, unless something happened in the few hours prior to your show, those members are not on cover from 1 September, which is a complete disaster.
Well, let me ask you this. There were mergers some years ago.
Yeah.
A lot of the smaller schemes did merge with large ones. Are there lots of smaller schemes out there with a similar, well, I'm not saying a similar solvency problem, but ailing members, retiring members, you know, and I mean, I don't expect you to name any of them. I'm just asking, are there schemes that other members in smaller schemes should be worrying about?
So I think, Brian, it's not an issue of the smaller or the size of the scheme. Size does matter when it comes to medical schemes, that's for sure. But I think there are other indicators, like when you see an exodus of members over a few years in succession. So you see members leaving the scheme. Why are they leaving? And the only members that can leave are members that can leave without having to have a waiting period or later in a penalty wherever they go. So that would be your healthy members. So you have to watch that. You have to watch annual increases. You have to watch the net healthcare result. Those are important financial statistics to watch if you want to be sure that the scheme is actually on the right trajectory. Otherwise, you'll find yourself in a position like Health Squared now.
But then, Clayton, so I now call you. I'm a member of Health Squared. Health Squared. You mentioned this story about, you mentioned late joiner, you mentioned pre-existing conditions, and you mentioned, you didn't mention waiting periods.
Yeah.
Those are the three aspects that any member joining a medical scheme that they need to look at. So the first thing is, why would there be a late joiner fee, which means people are paying more and it's a one-off fee? Mm-hmm. I mean, it goes on, it's added to the premium, and I think it can increase the premium by up to 75%. Correct. Is that correct?
Correct.
Now, why would there be a late joiner? They're moving from a scheme that they've been on to another scheme. So why would there be a late joiner?
Okay, so in this case, we're assuming that these members have been on Health Squared for longer than 2 years. We know that if they move now, they'll move within a 3 month period, meaning in 90 days. That would mean that they would only have a 3 month general waiting period. They'd have access to prescribed minimum benefits, which would give them access to emergency care and life-threatening situations. However, they're going to have to prove that they've been on a medical aid since the age of 35 to avoid a late joiner penalty. Now, that becomes challenging with a scheme like Health Squared. And on the topic of consolidations, because Health Squared is mainly made up of your SpectraMed and Resolution Health members, so you now have to go back in time in terms of the administrator to find all that historical data to prove membership from the age of 35, which could be very challenging.
And then what about waiting periods, and what about pre-existing conditions?
So
normally you'd have a 3 month waiting,
yeah,
and then 12 month pre-existing. Now a lot of these members have already got ailments,
yeah,
and they have been covered, and depending on the type of plan they would have had, if you had to now place a member, and I'll ask you that secondly, whether you can, but would they have a waiting period and pre-existing condition?
So again, it's subject to age, right? So if they're within a certain age bracket, we could move them to a particular scheme where they will not have all of these waiting periods, late joiner penalties we just spoke about. The other scenario would be that on the topic of waiting periods, the only waiting period that would apply in this case is a 3 month general waiting period, not 12 months condition specific. They would have access to prescribed minimum benefits. So if a new member had joined, and let's say they were 65 and was never on a medical scheme, they would not have access to PMB within the first 3 months. So that is a kind of, maybe not a life-saving situation, but it is a benefit they would have had that they have, which other members would not if they're joining for the first time.
Clayton, you mentioned PMBs, prescribed minimum benefits. Mm. And I'm not sure everyone understands what that means. It doesn't mean that whatever ailment you've got is covered under that section, does it? Or exactly what does it mean?
So in simple terms, so prescribed minimum benefits is separated into two sections. The one is the typical 27, 28 chronic conditions that we know of. That must be provided by the medical scheme for 12 months through a designated service provider if the scheme so wishes. The other is the 271 treatment pairs. Now, that's a lot of procedures and ailments that members could have access to. In another way to term it, put it differently, is during that 3 months, you'd have access to emergency care, emergency transportation, life-threatening situations, a possible loss of a limb. So they would have cover for those ailments. The important thing to do is to understand exactly what you have during those 3 months in your waiting period.
Clayton, let's just talk about the situation with members joining a medical scheme. The medical scheme can't turn them away.
Could it?
They've just got to provide, you know, either proof or not, as you said, late joiner. But let's understand, give you an example. I was talking to a dentist today, and he explained to me that his turnover's dropped, and he made the statement that anything up to 40% of his patients have downgraded from a comprehensive plan to a hospital plan, which means that there isn't the dentistry cover.
Correct.
In previous shows, you and I have chatted, and you said it wasn't that severe, the drop from a comprehensive to a hospital plan. Has that statistic changed in your business?
Yeah, Brian, I think it has. A lot of people are buying down, not only on the healthcare cover, but on the personal insurance side, on their life covers. I think consumers are just really you know, hit hard, particularly with the latest inflation rates and fuel and all other commodities that's going up. And so I'm increasingly, we're getting calls from people wanting to reevaluate the entire portfolio, not just healthcare. So I think healthcare is one component, and people are starting to think, you know what, let me self-insure my day-to-day benefits, which may not be an ideal solution. But I think we're in a situation now where consumers are really cash-strapped and there is very little choices available right now.
Because when you talk about healthcare, it's not just the medical aid, it's disability cover. And there's a very different between income to capital,
yeah.
Difference to between own occupation, any or similar occupations.
Yeah.
And then you've also got the situation of the dreaded disease cover, which will cover, give you a lump sum or a percentage of a lump sum, depending on the severity of the illness. Mm. So when you talk about having a relook at everything, I suppose within your healthcare program, you have to evaluate all those requirements.
Absolutely. So, exactly as you've mentioned, which I don't want to elaborate on too much, but what we're starting to see as an example is employer groups are purchasing income replacement benefits and not lump sum disability benefits in a group life arrangement. Why? Because it's reducing the cost in that way. But then it's left up to the employer again to purchase the severe illness and the disability benefit in lump sums because it's not provided for in group life. So you've got to have a look at all of this holistically. And similarly with gap cover. So, you know, people are actually asking, is there not a more affordable gap cover, even if it's 130 Rand less, you know, but that 130 Rand plus that 250 plus that 500 all adds up eventually.
But do you think all these components should now be consolidated in a healthcare plan?
No, I think they fall under different acts of insurance. And they've got different aspects to them. But I do believe that your portfolio must be evaluated holistically. So you've got to understand, are you overinsured in one area and underinsured in another? And you've got to optimize that spend. So we would typically find people would look at retirement funding later in life rather than sooner. But that would just land them up in a deficit in retirement. So the better thing to do is to optimize your insurance covers.
Well, we're going to take a short break. We're going to get to your emails in the next segment. Stay tuned. We'll be back shortly.